We are joined today by a very special guest, part seal, part beast.
Pixie, look.
Can you hear her?
That was Pixie, but she's camera shy. What the fuck?
What?
Why are you doing that now?
Doing what?
That's not even.
Just having a protein bar.
That's not even making a satisfying crunch. Don't smack your fucking lips. No matter how hard you try, this will never, ever be an ASMR podcast. Welcome to Two Servings of Fruit. I'm Chase.
I'm Liam. We're going to be talking with Brianne Williamson, YouTuber extraordinaire,
yeah.
Podcaster as well. Don't listen to their podcast.
Liam. Brianne also has a queer-focused podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So direct competition, mm-hmm. But there's room for us all.
You know what I think I learn every time we do these like interviews with someone who's like actually a little, you know, successful, you know?
Yes.
Is like, I just kind of take it as a learning experience of like, okay, this is what they did. What am I doing? Not that.
Yeah, or like, this is how they conduct themselves when they're face to face with another human.
How do I act? Not like that.
And that's why we're on the path to stardom.
That is, we're carving out a new zone. In the zones.
I'm not quite sure what
we're going where no man has gone before. We're going a little higher than Jeff Bezos.
There's actually millions of podcasts. I don't really know
where. Yeah. Where. But we are going to cast further. This is an inspirational speech for both of us.
This is kind of nice.
Yeah. You're welcome. We should change this into like a self-help podcast. Like a Gary Vee situation. You guys, you know what the one tip for success is?
Is that your Gary Vee?
Yeah. He's always so, like, tense.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. I like when he's, like, so intense about, like, people, like, being afraid of failure.
He's just like, some of the shit he says, I'm just like, it's so stupid. He's
like, you should be eating, like, 4 chocolate bars at work every day. If you want to be productive.
Holy fuck. That doesn't even sound like him.
He does sound like that.
We can't do a self-help podcast because we
don't know how to help ourselves.
We can't do anything, really. We couldn't even stick to visually recording us for more than 3 episodes. So.
We'll get back to that once we have once we put like a backdrop up. Or rent a studio space. Did you see the picture I sent you of like how to, instead of doing your foams, just wrap a blanket around the arm.
Yeah, but if we're doing a visual thing, I'm not gonna be underneath a fucking blanket and then fucking talking to my mic.
It could be kind of cool for like our Halloween episode, ghosts.
Ghosts. Kim Petras is gonna be on Halloween.
Oh my god.
Just kidding. She didn't reply to my emails.
Not yet.
I'll keep trying.
Yeah.
Anyways, time for weird shit of the week.
Yes. Do you want to go first?
Jingle.
Oh, cue jingle.
Weird, it's the weirdest shit that you've ever seen this week. Yeah, welcome to Weird Shit of the Week. The week.
I'm going to go first.
Okay.
There was a lot of weird shit to pick from this week, which is nice because
I saw a lot of murders.
Really?
I just saw a lot
of weird things happening in the world this week. I ended up picking this from Huffington Post. The headline is, Michigan parents owe son $30,441 for tossing out his porn collection.
How old is the son?
I don't know. Yeah, we're about to find out.
Hopefully he's of legal age.
U.S. District Attorney Paul Maloney ruled that David Working's parents had no right to throw out the collection of films, magazines, and other items. He's 43. The son.
So this is like a criminal case?
This is becoming Too much. Okay. Oh, no. Okay, it was a lawsuit.
Okay. So this wouldn't be a public attorney.
Eight months ago, he won a lawsuit against his parents. And now, just now, the decision has come about how much money they owe him for his, quote, prized porn collection. And he's 43 years old. Honestly, the headline makes it sound like it's a different situation, as per usual, but...
Not my headline, I'll tell you that for fucking free.
Why would they throw it out? And why did they find it? And where was it?
I'm assuming...
And does he live at home in his parents' basement?
I'm assuming he left home, left his porn collection there, and they were clearing out his shit, because they're like, fucking, I don't want to hold on to all this shit. There's so much porn here. Like, that's a lot of porn. $30,000 worth of porn?
Prize collection.
Yeah, so they're like, fucking get rid of this spunk junk.
Okay, here we... Ew! Ew! Spunk junk. That's actually a good one. Ew, I hate the word spunk. Anyways.
I love when people are like, oh my god, you're so spunky. Like, sorry, but... Ugh.
Sticky?
Covered in jizz?
Sorry. Okay, there's more context here. So he was living at home, but he'd been living there for almost a year after a divorce. And he brought his porn collection, obviously, with him.
Oh, God.
And I guess his parents found it and threw it out. So...
So he got divorced, he's depressed, he's masturbating all the time. And his parents are like, God, you...
Yeah, 10 months of their 43-year-old son living in their home, getting just his jerking spunk off all day everywhere. Long.
Probably, like, doesn't...
I don't blame them. Does he have a job?
Collecting porn. It's an investment.
I mean...
A mint condition Playboy from the 70s, sure. But I don't think those... I don't think that's mint condition.
Do I think that they had the right to throw it out? It's like a gray area.
Yeah, I think it's probably... It was probably actually honestly a difficult case considering it's, you know, in their home.
I guess they wouldn't have a right to throw it away. But would they have a right to remove it from their...
Home.
Property?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they destroyed it, which I guess is where it's like.
I fucking hope they burned that shit because that's
the fact
like
that they were like touching it all and stuff. Yeah. Like, sorry, did they wear gloves?
I just know how it would smell, like, just like bad.
Yeah,
his whole place probably smelled bad.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Anyways, they owe him $30,000. So.
Well. I hope it was worth it.
Imagine being the kid that sues your parents for throwing away your porn.
Yeah, that's also going to be like a really big, you know, now Christmas, don't fucking expect an invite.
Pixie snoring in the background. Yeah. What an angel.
Okay, well, this is my weird shit. From UPI, don't know what that is. I still don't know what this website is. Raw chicken ends up on Seattle Airport's baggage carousel. And not just a little bit of raw chicken, a lot of raw chicken.
Is there a picture?
Oh, it's got removed. Yeah, there is. From
the picture was removed?
I guess so. Let me see if I can see. You can see in the thumbnail here.
Okay.
Like a block of raw chicken.
Holy fuck, that's a lot.
Yeah, so basically, it's a short article. If you want to read it, check it out. But TSA just shared a video when a block of raw chicken ended up on the baggage carousel. They said that the chicken had apparently been in a cooler and checked baggage, but had come free of its container and ended up as a mass of raw meat on the baggage claim carousel.
I'm sorry, what? Are you... I didn't think you were allowed to check raw meat.
I don't think you are. Either.
So who let that on the plane?
If it's a domestic flight, maybe.
Oh, yeah,
international, maybe. I know you would... No, they would say no. But,
Why the fuck are you bringing a block of raw chicken? Where are you going?
Them just talking about this? Like, we hear at one time these wings and thighs were cooped up in a cooler. Somewhere between baggage and the carousel claim, they became free range.
That is not what they wrote. Is that a quote? A direct quote?
That was a quote from their Instagram post. They said, don't wing your travel packing.
Okay, that's
enough. In order to keep from ruffing any feathers, meat should be properly packaged.
Ruffing any feathers?
Ruffling. Oh. Ice or dry ice is permitted to keep the flock chilled.
I fucking am over that now, actually. They lost me completely.
Sorry, but I think it's absolutely fucked up and hilarious to see you're picking up your bag of clothes and, like, next to your suitcase, this frozen solid, hopefully frozen solid, if not, defrosting block of raw chicken cube-shaped.
It did look like it was somewhat frozen because it was in a pretty...
solid cube.
Mass. Like, if it wasn't, it would be, like, breasts everywhere. Linked to my story. Breasts everywhere.
Breasts everywhere. Someone probably has to pay. Here. I really got big taxes.
Would you, if big you were getting taxes. Your bag, would you grab a piece of chicken? Or honestly, why not? Raw chicken breasts can be a little pricey sometimes. So.
They looked like wings.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
I love chicken wings.
But, like, just plain. Again, why do you need to bring so much chicken? Like, were you visiting a farm? Like, why did you need to bring a cooler full of chicken home?
Oh, you think maybe they went somewhere where they had supremely, amazingly cheap chicken and they're bringing it home?
When I go to Prince Rupert and we go fishing, we take a couple fish home that we catch.
Did you this time?
Yeah, we caught... I mean, we only didn't catch as many, but, like, usually... Like, sometimes we can bring home, like, a fuck ton of fish.
Liam fishing is just a funny image to me.
Just, like, a fuck ton of salmon.
Yeah.
But, like, this, it's like, maybe they were visiting a farm, and they just had such fresh, organic, raw chicken that they were killing right there, and they're like, you know, let's bring this chicken home. Let's bring these bad boys
back. That was the wrong choice. Who is punished for this? Because this is disturbing.
Yeah, I don't know who.
And did the people just...
President Obama.
So the person waiting for their luggage, and they know damn well that they checked a cooler full of chicken, do they go and get their chicken, or do they pretend like they wasn't that? Yeah. Like, do you just say, forget it? Like, you're just not like, worth
who
it?
Who did that?
Like, who the fuck would do that? Who did that? And the chicken's just going around and around.
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, do you even want your chicken once it's on the baggage claim carousel?
Also, you know how, like, bags on the carousel, like, they come off and they slide down and slam into each other? Like, what if people's bags were just slamming into the chicken? That's fucked. The more I think about it, there are layers to this.
And you know, like, how the baggage carousel kind of, like, can pinch? I wonder if there's any, like, raw chicken bits pinched in there, too. Ew. Like when you turn in the corner?
Oh my yeah. God. Salmonella. Like, fuck.
Airports are not safe. Oh not God. For anybody.
Well, that was weird shit of the week.
That was pretty fucking fire, if you ask me.
Honestly, best weird shit in a while.
Yeah, that was fucking fire. Anyways, so we're speaking with Brianne Williamson today. She's a YouTuber, TikToker, Instagrammer, all around social media savant.
Wow.
Savant.
Influencer.
Yeah.
Short film creator.
I feel like when we talk to these people, I get a lot of insight about what their experiences are like. And now that we've had this interview, I am kind of curious, like, what did you, I mean, I think you tried to do YouTube for a bit.
Oh my God. I had a YouTube channel when I was... 12?
I had one when I was a teenager. I have like 4 videos.
I had one when I was 12, and it was when like YouTube was not even like being a YouTuber wasn't a huge thing.
Yeah.
And then I just got lazy and bored and stopped doing it. Could have led to a path of wealth and fame, but that's okay. And then I created it again when I was like 16, and I did it for 2 years.
You did it for 2 years?
Yeah, every week.
Really?
Most of them are still up, but before this episode goes live, I will be privating them.
See, my YouTube videos were like, once when I was 9, we had like a webcam attached to our computer, and I just filmed from that, and it was me reacting to 2 Girls, 1 Cup.
Yeah, I have a video. Oh my God, there's...
Don't know why I posted that at 9 years old.
Oh my, I remember the first time I saw 2 Girls, 1 Cup.
Fucked up.
I was in... elementary school, for, like in class, like at school.
I was definitely being dramatic in this. I was like pretending to throw up.
There's a video of me, and it's on a webcam. And I remember I don't know how old I was, maybe 11. And I was like in a hotel. I don't know where I was, but I'm like really upset with Miley Cyrus for her "Can't Be Tamed" music video. I thought it was very inappropriate.
Oh my God.
That's not on the internet anymore, but I have that on my computer.
Thank God that's not on the internet. You like, Miley, you broke my heart, you slut.
And I think I was wearing fingerless gloves. It was a whole situation. Oh my God. I had my bang.
Jesus Christ. See, the other YouTube videos I had were like, I did the cinnamon challenge twice. First time with a ladle. Second time, I actually just completed it. I just ate a tablespoonful of cinnamon, which was worse. I don't know why I thought that I would feel success.
Most people just spit it out.
Yeah.
I've never done that on camera, but I did the cinnamon challenge just...
I did it with the ladle. I got cinnamon in my eyes, and it was like abrasive, and it hurt. It was painful, because I coughed into the spoon in my face.
Didn't it come out that, like, it was bad to do the cinnamon challenge?
It's horrible for you. You can get in your fucking lungs and shit. Yeah, I did it with a fucking ladle.
What are some other stupid challenges of the internet?
So I did that one with Melissa, and I also did with Melissa. We came up with this challenge. We found out if you put like a container full of sour icebreakers in your mouth, you will salivate beyond belief. Like, you'll drool hard.
Ew.
Because you can't even keep them all in your mouth. So we just did that. And we just put so many icebreakers in our mouth. Ew. And just drooled.
I feel like I'm about to drool just thinking about it.
And
like,
we just tried to finish, the challenge was to finish the icebreakers, like to eat them.
Did you?
Yeah.
And did that become a viral sensation?
No. It was just like slurping up drool.
So what are the other viral challenges of the 2000s and 10s?
I remember cinnamon challenge. Everything after that was like planking, mannequin challenge. I used to have that Instagram.
The mannequin challenge. Full on Instagram,
like a video.
That was so stupid. I feel like Mentos and Coke was big on the internet, but I feel like that was a thing like before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that was just a thing that kids did.
What other? I can't even think of any like other food challenges other than like hot peppers or like hot food, spicy food. Ghost pepper challenges when like girls would do that and start crying. It's like, what did you expect?
Well, they still have that Hot Ones show. Do you watch that?
Sometimes, but I just think I love hot wings and I love spicy food, but I think I have IBS and I just think that would,
You should do Hot Ones live on the pod.
I would swell up.
Did you see the current challenge that everyone's trying to do? The milk crate. The milk box challenge or whatever.
Where you drink a lot of milk?
No, it's like, you know those milk crates? They're just the crates.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you build like a staircase going up and going down out of those, like 7 high or whatever. And then you have to walk across it.
That's fucking dangerous.
It's fucking, people are fucking slamming their heads, their backs. They're like on the concrete. Yeah, that shit
fucking is those
stable. I've seen one person do it successfully.
Jesus.
Just in case you want to boot up your YouTube channel. That's a good place to start.
Doing the milk crate challenge over a pit of alligator.
Just Pixie in an alligator costume.
Aww. I'd crush her. That would be sad.
You could not crush her.
She's a tank.
She is a tank made of jello.
Yeah. The other videos I have on my YouTube, I think, are just like English projects.
I remember in high school when they used to be like, upload a YouTube video.
And they had no idea how hard that shit would be. Like, you have to do, like, scenes and shit.
Yeah.
That fucking shit took time.
Of course they have no idea how hard it is. They're fucking old.
Literally, they're people. Just like, make a video.
Just make a video.
Make a video.
Costumes. Script. Set. Scenes. Lighting. Bye tomorrow.
Yeah, and you have no money. Like, the other thing is you're a fucking teenager. You don't have any money to do that.
So all the videos would be like around our high school, like,
yeah, in regular clothes.
Yeah. Saying fucking Macbeth.
Yeah. Those were fun.
Stupid.
I did some weird shit on those videos. Really weird shit.
Were you big on Tumblr? I know we talked to Brianna about Tumblr. Were you big on Tumblr?
So, I had Tumblr for the longest time when I was an angsty teenager, and I'd be just reblogging all day long. I'd be reblog.
Yeah.
Tumblr had some funny ass shit, but yeah, Tumblr was low-key toxic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I always thought Tumblr was, like, my safe space and, like, expressive and stuff. It's a bunch of depressed teenagers enabling each other's depression.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, but that shit was not actually good for anybody.
Yeah. I was big on Tumblr. Not, like, famous. But
I only had, like, 70 followers.
I think I got up to, like, 300.
I know people who, like, I joined groups on Facebook to try and get more followers.
Really?
And nobody would fucking, like, interact with me. It was like, I was the biggest loser in these groups. I'd be like, hey, guys.
I know a few people who had, like, 10K on Tumblr.
Oh, yeah. I know people, because, like, apparently it wasn't as hard. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really know how. I don't know.
I don't either. I don't know.
But I was on Tumblr, and I was big on Lady Gaga Tumblrs.
Oh, really?
So I reblogged a lot of Lady Gaga stuff. And I was on, you know about her website? Littlemonsters.com.
No.
It was like this website Lady Gaga launched, and you had to like apply to, to be on it. And it was like a social media of just Lady Gaga fans.
That's so far.
And it took so long for me to get on it. And then I was so happy I almost cried when I got on. And then no one talked to me on there. But like Gaga would go on and talk to people, or like her team would under her name.
I'm sure she actually did sometimes.
She seems like the type.
Yeah. Especially at that time.
Yeah.
Like back then.
That was what I did on the internet at 12. Tumblr would just romanticize self-harm and
romanticize shit
and depression.
Yeah.
So
big time.
And now it doesn't even have porn anymore. So
exactly. What's the point?
Yeah.
It's useless. It's not even as funny anymore. Like, text posts used to be funny to me. Now I look at them, I'm like, God, shut the fuck up.
Is anyone on Tumblr still?
I don't know. I don't know. I remember everyone thought Pinterest was going to take over as Tumblr, but Pinterest is just for, like, white ladies.
Do you think TikTok, people will look back in 10 years and say TikTok was toxic as fuck?
I think people will look back on it maybe the way they look back on Vine and just be like, Jesus Christ, like, what was the hype?
Yeah. You know
what
I mean? Well, do you think TikTok will be dead in 10 years?
No, I think TikTok is a little more lasting than Vine, because Vine, you needed to be more engaged. Like, TikTok, the algorithm is scary.
Yeah. We've like, talked about it.
As a thought, even. Just, yeah. Like, this computer processor can predict what you'll watch, and you will watch it.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
I mean, I think TikTok has definitely solidified itself in, like, the social media.
Yeah.
Like,
I think,
what's the word I'm looking for?
Hierarchy? Echelon?
Sure. like the standard. Like, what's the word for, like, English degree is coming in handy here. I don't remember. Like, you know, you think of something, you instantly think of something.
Oh, yeah. I could, yeah, I don't know what, if there is a word for that, maybe like, I don't know.
Well, we'll circle back.
We got it. We get the point. Perfect. We understand.
Perfect.
I do think maybe like TikTok fame is fleeting. I'm sure. I mean, all fame is fleeting, especially online. I feel like the one thing that's like very different about being famous in the internet age or being famous just on the internet is it is like so fickle. Like people will be famous for 20 minutes, literally.
Well, like you look back, I even look back, and it's funny you say that because I just was thinking the other day, like, whatever happened to Glozell? And like, so I looked up Glozell, and she like recently had a show that was trying to be launched, and it was about how like she is broke. Like,
really?
She like has no money.
Did she ever have a lot of money? Like, I don't think she ever really.
I think for like a very short period of time, she was getting like deals and she was doing red carpet correspondence and stuff like that. And now, and then I was thinking, like, who are the YouTubers I used to like love and adore as a youth? And I used to watch Lohanthony, who we know, what's that.
Amen, baby.
Amen. And like this YouTuber named That's So Jack. And he's just...
I feel like I know that name.
...not famous at all anymore. And, like, all these people...
I think, like, when I think of people who are famous on the internet, especially, it's just, like... I think it's just because it happens so quickly without... Like, when you get famous and you're going to... Like, you're in a movie or something, and you blow up in a movie setting, you have, like, better networks to maybe make that last, like...
Well, then people will want you in their movies.
Exactly. There's that, and then there's also the fact that, like, you already have an agent, because you can't get that role without an agent.
Yeah.
You're probably, you know, getting management.
You're, like, in the machine. You're in the... the
exactly. You're circles. Talking. You're meeting people like on set, producers, yeah. plural stuff like that. When you blow up from a few TikToks,
you're it's in like, your house.
You're yeah. When you're in your house, and then two, you're just getting DMs from people you don't know who are probably like, "Hey, I want to represent you." Like, you don't know who's actually gonna be
for sure
good. You don't know what is a good deal. You don't actually like, you know what I mean? Like, and then the deals that people are making are like weird new things.
Well, I will say, I feel like the like idea of TikTok famous for like the big people on TikTok, like the Addison Rae's and the Charlie's and the whoever the fuck else.
Even then, it's like, what is she like? Who's representing Addison Rae, and who was the first person to do it? Like, how did she get involved in that scene? Was she just like, I'm just gonna move to LA because this dude in my DMs told me it's the best business move?
Yeah, I don't know, but like, I just feel like the idea of internet celebrity since TikTok is, I think it's starting to merge with just celebrity, period.
Why do you think? Yeah,
because I think young people are like consuming these people's content like so much. Mm. Like, I feel like back when it was like the Lohanthanys and stuff, it was like, oh, those people are YouTubers, like they're famous on the internet, like they're not at like the Hollywood events and stuff, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I also think part of the reason why is maybe because of like the way we can manipulate the actual physical appearance, like even on TikTok, it's so easy to not look like yourself with a filter. Like, it's actually fucked up.
Is it really?
Yes.
How do I do that?
Like, there are so many filters where you just put it on and you're like, wow, I look really good. And then you're just like, why is that? And it's just because of, like, tweaking small little things that aren't yeah. as perceptible. So it's like, you can still look like yourself, but still look Photoshopped a bit, even in a video. And then the same thing on Instagram. And then once you get a little bit of money, it's so cheap to go under the knife a bit and like get, you know, fillers or Botox or whatever, a nose yeah. job, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Not huge things. And then suddenly you're like this extremely good looking person and you're posting on like Instagram and stuff and you're Photoshopping all those photos. It's like, it's so easy to look like a celebrity too. Like back when Shane Dawson was cool on YouTube, it was like, fuck, this dude's just ugly, but at least he was like making jokes. You know what I mean?
His racist joke. Yeah. His homophobic joke.
And like, same with Lohanthany. Like, you know, I mean, sure, he was like just like a random teenager who was just ranting on the internet.
You know what I mean? Going like, on Omegle and shit.
Exactly. That was the shtick. Now it's like, wow, this is like such a hot, cool person being so hot and cool in Los Angeles.
I get it. Yeah. Did you see that thing? It's totally fake. It was like the guest list for the Met Gala that got leaked and the seating charts for the Met Gala that got leaked.
No.
Did you see? It was like, had so many TikTok influencers on it, like Addison Rae and the D'Amelio twins. And Jesus. Sorry, they're not twins, but sisters. Who gives a fuck? And like, just like all these internet people. And then the seating chart was like Beyonce, Charli D'Amelio, Addison Rae, Jay-Z. Like, sorry. I'm sorry. We're not seating Beyonce at the same table as fucking Addison Rae.
Yeah, she's... Well, I mean, James Charles went to the fucking Met Gala.
True.
That made a little more sense because, again, it was more YouTuber. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he was really on this border between YouTube fame, TikTok fame, I would say, Instagram fame.
I think I would say James Charles is one of the ones that was able to, like, take his YouTube fame and really make it, like, cross over to, like, business. Cosmetics, yeah. Business, cover girl.
Yeah.
Not that I like James Charles
no.
at all, but like he did do that. Yeah. So like I, you know, even when he was invited to the Met Gala, I was kind of like, eh.
I know, it was like, kind of weird, like, but know, I was like, whatever.
It's just like the Met Gala is like elite. Like that's elite, you know? Like everyone's like, I want to be go to the Met Gala. And like some big name, like they don't even invite all the Kardashian Jenners to the Met Gala. Like Kourtney and Khloe don't get an invite. It's just Kim, Kylie, and Kendall. Yeah. Like we should not be inviting.
The Met Gala is one of the weirdest things, like, that I think of sometimes. Like, it is literally just a parade of celebrity.
I missed it last year. Like, I like seeing all the looks. People try to fit the theme, and then they fail miserably.
Well, it's so bizarre, too, because, like, you're kind of, like, you have rules. Like,
yeah.
You don't actually really have, like, a lot of autonomy when you go to the Met Gala. You're kind of just, like... Again, paraded. It's like this pageantry of celebrity status.
It seems like fun inside. It seems a little bit looser inside.
And I'm sure it's probably fun because everybody feels so big-headed.
Well, there used to be, like, no, obviously, like, videos and stuff people could take inside. But I think now it's harder to, like, police that. And so, like, there's, like, bathroom, like, videos of everyone, all these big-name celebrities just fucked up in the bathroom. And there's those photos of, I fucking love those photos where it's, like, all these models and like actors taking pictures in the bathroom, and then Lady Gaga's just waiting behind them to pee, and she's just like, her face is like just waiting to take a piss, like it's so funny.
Yeah I mean, the fucking Met Gala's the weirdest thing.
You might as well invite us.
I want to go to the Met Gala. Us,
Addison, same level.
It would be, honestly, like, it would be really cool to be that famous.
Yeah.
It would be, it'd be weird, but it'd be cool.
I just know Addison and Charlie and whoever else are not going to dress to fit the theme. They're going to wear something stupid.
They're representing Forever 21 and H&M.
Straight up. Who dressed you tonight? Thrifties.
I'm wearing American Eagle.
Or they'll go to, like, a Gucci store and just buy something. You know what I mean?
I want couture. The thing I actually think happens at the Met Gala is you actually get paired up with a designer and they dress you. So you don't really get to choose.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I know. Like, I know big names. Because that's like the year they did Comme des Garçons and Rihanna was the only one wearing Comme des Garçons. It's because she was the host. So she got paired up with Comme des Garçons. She had the most obvious look that looked like Comme des Garçons, and then all these other like big celebrities, they get like paired up with like Valentino Versace or whatever.
I think people like let's say Beyonce. Mm-hmm. I think she has a say in what designer's dressing her.
I'm probably in what designer's dressing her, but then also I think they can get a little bit of input in like what they want the dress to look like. But ultimately, I do think a lot of those decisions are made by the designer.
I wonder how it works. Like really, like the like
Anna Wintour sits you down in her office, and she says, listen here, you little shit. You're gonna wear this, it's gonna look fucking ugly, and everyone's gonna make fun of you. And that's what you get if you wanna come.
Her saying that to Beyonce. Yeah. Beyonce, like, okay. James Charles is sitting there crying.
She's like, if you even wanna step foot inside this building, you will wear what I tell you.
But I just, like, I don't. Maybe they get paired up, but do you think designers get to, like, put their bid in for what celebrities they want?
Maybe, probably.
Because I think the only person who was willing to dress James Charles was Alexander Wang, who I think dressed him when he went.
Oh, really?
Who, I think Alexander Wang has had some...
Really?
Sexual allegations.
Jeez.
I think it was Alexander Wang. Maybe not. But either way, I hated his look. So, cheers to the Met Gala. Anyways, we've gone on long enough.
Okay, yeah. This is just welcome, Brian.
This is just a stream of consciousness about...
That's what a good podcast is.
Internet.
Celebrity status.
Stardom.
Yeah. Hopefully we get there.
I don't know if I even want to be there after this conversation.
Me, like, hopefully I can be that famous. Fingers crossed.
Our guest today is a YouTuber, podcaster, and filmmaker that wrote and co-directed her short film, Coming Out, which has almost 2 million views on YouTube.
Please welcome to the pod, Brianne Williamson. Hi, Brianne.
Hi. Sorry, hi. I'm just going to change my girlfriend's name off the screen. This always happens. She uses my Zoom and she changes it, and then I have to change it back. I'm like, this is codependent as it gets.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks for being here, especially on such short notice.
Oh, this is perfect for me. I'm like a little chaotic with how I plan my life. So when people are like really planned and in advance, I'm like, that's awesome for you. But I literally don't know what day it is. So
I'm like, that's like Liam. I like to plan literally months in advance or I get stressed out.
Your mental health is probably so much better than mine.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say that much.
This is so great. And I looked and y'all are based in Vancouver, right?
Yep.
Oh my God. So awesome. Small
Vancouver
world.
Vancouver legends.
Love it. Yes.
So I think so we're just going to chat about, just to give you a little like overview. I really want to talk about your short film and just kind of like your experience as a queer content creator.
Okay. Awesome.
So if anything you don't want to talk about, Jess, tell us to move on.
Okay, sounds good. I'm pretty much an open book, so I'll be interested to see if you can find something I don't want to talk about. But
oh, it sounds like a challenge.
Yeah,
like
we'll do it. Just to start off, I am a little curious. Like, I always, anytime we talk to anyone that is a content creator, I mm-hmm. always wonder, like, what drove you to start doing that, or like what was the first step you took in that path?
Yeah, I think for me it was kind of unique how I got into the whole content creator thing, because I never really made a choice that I wanted to create content. It started for me on Tumblr way back in the day, and it was really an outlet for me to explore my sexuality without the fear that people in my high school were going to find my page, because at that point they had other focuses. None of my friend group was on Tumblr, and I found this kind of like unique, like niche community within Tumblr that were queer women from all over the world, really. And I remember being at a party and hearing from someone that their gay friend was on Tumblr. And some of my friends were like, what's Tumblr? And they were like, oh, I don't know, I think it's a gay thing. And I was like, okay, fuck, I need to be on that gay thing. Where do I find that gay thing? So I remember like making a profile and then like looking up the hashtags. And at this point, I like really wasn't even out to myself. I didn't know who I was, but I just knew that I was eager to find out more and definitely confused. And I found like a really cool little community online. And I started basically journaling on Tumblr and kind of grew my page from there. And then I think it was like 6 months, a year, and I had 10,000 followers on Tumblr, which at the time was like huge. And I was like, whoa, like this was before the times of like Instagram, social media. So like, I couldn't even really comprehend what 10,000 meant. Like, I was like, why are all these people following me? I didn't really get it. And then, one day I had someone be like, hey, have you ever thought about being a YouTuber? You write a lot and it would be cool to see you like actually do videos and discuss about it. And I didn't even know what a YouTuber was. I had only seen YouTube for like looking up stuff that I had missed on TV, like the Janet Jackson boob reveal. I was like, okay, do people actually go and sit on YouTube and talk about themselves? So I kind of started looking at that. And then my first video was basically ripping off the Band-Aid. It was called Coming Out, a classic, a gay YouTube classic. And it was kind of my way of being like, this is the first time that I know everyone in my life, everyone in my town, everyone in my high school is going to see this or hear about this. So it was kind of a way for me to stop having to like dodge questions. And at that point I had come out to like close friends and family, and I was like, I just need everyone to know to some degree.
So
from there it just kind of grew on YouTube, and then the whole Instagram thing started. So it was very natural for me, a natural progression, and I've tried to maintain that with just doing things that, I hate to use the word authentic, eye roll, but like feel authentic to me and feel like I'm just kind of like journaling just in different capacities.
I used to, like, as a gay teenager, loved going on YouTube and just looking up Coming Out. Like, I'd like, you know what I mean? I'd be living vicariously. I'd be like, yes, do it. Uh-huh. Do it. I know. Come out to your dad.
Right? And it's like, that's the thing. It is so important for me to see. And I think with content, like your podcast, anything like that, it's just, if you're coming from a core of like, this is something that I needed to see when I was younger or in a different place in my life, then it's going to be good content because someone out there still needs to see it.
Yeah, totally. For sure. Follow-up question. Mm-hmm. I am curious, like, so in that timeline, when did it really start picking up? I mean, you talked about getting like 10,000 followers on Tumblr, which is crazy, because when I had Tumblr, I had like 70 and I thought I was doing great. I was like, yes. But like with YouTube and everything like growing very naturally, like when did all of the, when did your online presence really become more like have its roots start developing?
Right. I would say YouTube, like I kind of missed the jump on YouTube because any social media, when it starts, it has a natural like progression boost. We're seeing that right now with TikTok, right? And by the time I jumped joined YouTube, I was kind of late to the game. But I still did pretty well with my videos. I grew like very slowly, but I'd say when Instagram became more mainstream and popular, I originally made two accounts, one that was like my gay account and one that was like my, like what everyone's going to see account, and started posting on Instagram in the same way I kind of post on Tumblr with longer captions and more storytelling style. And I'd say that's when it really kind of kicked off and then brought people to my YouTube from there.
I wanted to ask about your short film that has a ton of views on YouTube. I just wanted to know how like that project came about. How did you decide you wanted to do that?
Okay, well, I mentioned earlier that I'm a little chaotic. And when I decide that I want to do something, I just do it. I don't really, I think, honestly, the reason why I do so much that I do, like, people are like, oh, aren't you like scared to try new things? I'm like, I don't give myself time to think about it, to be honest. I decide that I want to do something and I'm just like, okay, if I sit on this for 2 months, I'm going to talk myself out of it because I'm going to find reasons why I'm not qualified enough, or I don't know enough, or it's going to stress me out. So I just do it. So I knew I wanted to do a short film. I had been writing for a little while, different ideas. And I was like, hey, there's a festival coming up in September that I really want to get this short film in. It was July, I think. And the date that you had to send the film in to get accepted or not was in like 3 weeks. So I was like, okay, I have like an end game. I've just got to do it. At this point, I was so ignorant to the filmmaking process. I mean, realistically, I still am, but I genuinely, because I had been a YouTuber where I'd sit down, record a video for 3 hours, edit it for an afternoon, and then it was ready to go. I was like, 3 weeks, that's plenty of time to do a short film. I still hadn't written the script. I had no idea who I was casting. I didn't have a place to go. I started researching where I could film this, and I found some film sets, and I went and I did the walk around, and they were like, okay, before we accept you to like book this space, we just need to see your script because, you know, to make sure that it's something that we believe in, that we can approve, you know, etc. I was like, okay, no problem. I went home that night, wrote the script, and sent it to them in 2 hours because I was like, oh my God, I need a script to book this and I need to start filming this next week. So I just like word vomited, but that's very natural for me with the creative process. It's always up in my head. So like, I already knew what I wanted. It like the scenes had already been going in my head. I just needed to get it down. And then I booked the space and then I was like, okay, fuck. Can I swear on your podcast?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I was like, hey, fuck, I need a cast. I need someone to film this. I have no idea. I searched hashtag Vancouver film on Instagram and just started obnoxiously DMing people and being like, hi, I've never done this before. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be asking for. Are you someone who films or does audio or like sets? Like, do you know anyone who does? What's good? Like, and they're like, a few people were really nice. Like, oh yeah, when are you doing this? I was like, Monday in like 3 days. So I just like, I don't know. I really lucked out. I found a couple great people that were eager to jump on the project. And I ended up casting a lot of my friends that happen to be stand-up comedians. So I was like, I know that they can come in. I didn't even do auditions. I was like, I just know that they can come in and at least deliver a couple lines. Like, this is what they do. And we started filming. We filmed it in 2 days, which again, they told me that I should have at least had four, because for my first script I ever wrote, I wrote something with like 10 fucking scenes. Like, what was I thinking? Like, completely different sets, everything. I now understand why Friends was filmed on the same fucking set for like a whole season. I'm like, this was so much more work. Like, if I ever wrote anything again, it would be two people sitting on a kitchen counter for 10 minutes. But you know what? I'm happy I did it, because I think if I had known how much work went into it, obviously I would have talked myself out of it. Absolutely. Like, it was chaotic. I genuinely did not sleep for 3 weeks, But we got it done. It got into the festival and then played there, premiered there. And then I put it on YouTube and yeah.
Well, I mean, it looks great. I'm honestly shocked. 2 days. That's
yeah, thank me too.
That must have been a very frantic 2 days.
Yes.
Like the like watching it, the like scenes are so different. So
I know.
It looks like it was filmed over a month. Like for real. Like
it was, I appreciate that. I really do appreciate that. It's honestly, it's a testament to if you want to get something done, you can get it done. Yeah. I'm not going to say that you won't cry potentially the whole time, but it will get done. No, I just want it. Like I'm like that. I'm the classic person that, you know, in like job interviews, when they say when you're a procrastinator, you're supposed to say you work well under pressure. That's me. Like if I plan things too far in advance, I'll talk myself out of it or I'll forget about it. But for me, it works really well to be under the gun. I did feel bad for putting other people under the gun. But for me, it works really well.
About the scenes, like it's all different kind of like montage style of, yeah, of times you were presumed straight.
Yes.
How much of that is real life experience and how much of that did you come up with?
Every one of the scenes is at least rooted in a real life experience. So every single one of them. So some are obviously exaggerated or some, yeah, characters are changed, but every single one of them has happened to some degree. And I think a lot of femme presenting queer women can identify with that because I mean, it's just a common thing. When people ask me the question, when did you come out? I say, like, I'm still coming out. Like, I come out all the time because people, yeah, just assume heteronormativity before anything else, especially when it comes to femme presenting women. So that was the whole premise of the short film, because as you can imagine, being a YouTuber, going on podcasts, the most common question I got asked all the time in media was, when did you come out? So I was just kind of frustrated with having to answer that question, not because, yeah, I didn't understand why it was being asked, but just because I was frustrated by society that I thought at one point in my life, I genuinely thought I was going to be able to come out and then I'd never have to deal with it again. So the fact that that didn't happen for me and for so many people frustrated me, because the only thing I had ever seen represented in the media was this big, like, rip the Band-Aid off moment. Woohoo, the town throws a parade and then everyone knows and everyone's happy and everyone goes on with their lives. And I think queer people in media, because of that representation, are kind of set up with this expectation that, okay, I've got to get over this hurdle and then it'll be good. And unfortunately, it often feels like that hurdle just keeps moving forward. Every time you meet a new friend or you go to a new office, you meet a new coworker, a new client, more often than not, you have to come out to some capacity, even if it's in a casual way. So I just needed that piece of media for myself. And I was like, okay, maybe other people will relate to this too. And then obviously the response has been fantastic. So I think it was something that did need to be out there.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's something that gets missed by a lot, yeah, of people who aren't LGBT. I think they don't, mm-hmm, think they don't understand that, like, oh, you know, like you said, I think starting a new job in particular is one that I always find a little, yeah, daunting just for that fact. Cause I'm like, yeah, just by the way, I'm gay. Like, just so everyone knows that no one has to speculate.
Yes, I know. It feels like you constantly have to be kind of like, okay, yeah, yeah, no, let's just get, yeah, this out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I came out on Facebook when I was like 12 and I really, really, really thought that was it. And I remember, yeah, I got a job at Starbucks when I was 17 and I told this woman that I was gay because I just, yeah, she was asking if I have a girlfriend. I said, no, I'm gay. And her follow-up was, do you believe in God?
No. Oh my God.
And I said, I'm uncomfortable actually. Yeah.
I prefer not to be having this conversation. Can we talk, yeah, about coffee?
So I think that's why it's such a relatable thing for so many queer people, because, yeah, it really never stops.
It really doesn't. And I think also there's this weird thing specifically with queer women that a lot of middle-aged folks out there, when you say girlfriend, they genuinely believe a lot of the time that you're meaning your friend who's a girl. So like, I've had it where even though I am coming out and having like, oh, I actually live with my girlfriend over there, they're like, oh, that's nice, you know. And I wanted to put that in there too, because, and then they'll be like, oh yeah, me and my girlfriend just went on a gals trip the other weekend, and that's great that you guys are doing that. And I'm just like, it's still not reading. So at this point I have to like either double down and like come out again and be like, no, by girlfriend I mean like someone that I fuck, like what do you want me to do? Or I just have to be like, okay, yeah, totally. So I think it's just such a continual thing. And I think queer people are constantly put in the position where they have to make those choices. Like, is this conversation even worth it? Yeah. A lot of the times.
Sometimes like, okay, you just can't be bothered. Like,
no, it's just a passerby. You're like, hey, whatever. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am curious, like, when you... It sounds like it was a fast process to get the film made and like from script to screen, but did it evolve along the way, or was that really how you had intended it from the start? Like, were you always kind of set on this idea of a montage style, or was it going to be something different?
I was always set on that idea. And I think it's just because I had all these moments and I really wanted them all to be there, but I didn't really know how to string them together. And I knew also that I didn't have the budget or time to make a feature fucking film. I was like, okay. I was like, if we're going to try and string this shit together, it's going to be so long. And it's funny because it speaks also to my ignorance of filmmaking, because while we were filming it, one of the guys on set, he was like, who works on film quite often, he was like, oh, this is such like a unique style to be doing it in. And I was like, is it? Like, I hadn't even really thought about it. I just knew that that's the way that I wanted to see it. And I think not knowing a lot of how things are usually done helped me out, because I didn't like second guess my instinct of how I wanted it to be. But again, if anyone's out there wanting to make a short film, I would recommend limiting it to maybe like 2-3 sets your first time. Like this, it was chaotic. But it was a lot of fun. The one thing that definitely developed as we were filming is I had a written script, obviously, that I sent to people before. And I mean, I wrote it, so like I knew how it was going down, but I was so busy on set. I really was, to a certain capacity, also taking on like a director role. I was definitely producer, production, everything else. I'm fucking like bringing in sushi for the crew. Meanwhile, I'm in every scene. So I would literally be getting my hair changed and like, okay, what am I supposed to say in this scene? And like short-term memory, just log it and then say it. Like I didn't practice at all. I didn't anything, which again, probably helped me because I'm not an actress. And I didn't have any training. So I just was like, just go for it. Just do what you got to do and get it done. But with that, I ended up changing a lot of the scenes because as I said them out loud, I would be like, that's not how we would say it. So we would kind of just spin different scenes in different ways off of the script. But again, I had a really awesome cast that do stand up and improv and were really good at like adjusting.
Yeah.
But it was funny, one of our like Kickstarter rewards or whatever was getting a signed script, which was really fun to do. And people seemed to really enjoy it. But I had so many posts after it went out of people like taking pictures of the script they received and being like, this isn't the scene. Like noting all the differences. I'm like, oh yeah, we just changed that.
In your other like queer content, we actually just did a roundtable recently, and I like to ask sort of queer performers, not that you're a performer, but like an influencer, content creator, how their queer identity kind of shapes the decisions they make, the content they make. Like, where does that play in for you? Does it affect every decision you make when you post?
Yeah, I think for me, I've always found relatability through laughter. So therapy through laughter, even, I like to say. So like for me, I always feel like if I can disarm someone with laughter first, then they might learn something. I think that the internet can be a dark place. I think it's so important that people tell their stories, especially in the most emotional, serious way that they feel like they need to. But for me, what tends to work, and I know when I learn the most, is when I'm laughing watching something, and then it's also sinking in. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I get that you're making fun of me right now, but it doesn't feel like you're putting me on defense. It feels like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, that's where I come from when, even with the short film coming out, like that was definitely not only supposed to be great representation for people that have experienced that, like myself, but also I really wanted to come from a place that folks that identify as heterosexual could watch it and not feel like, oh, you're just trying to drive this down my throat. Oh, you're trying to tell me why I'm wrong, why, whatever. That they can probably laugh at these scenarios like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that queer people have to deal with this. This is so silly. Maybe I can adjust the way that I communicate. And that goes the same for TikTok. It goes the same for my podcast, I Can Explain Podcast. We answer the questions that people are too afraid to ask in a way that, like, we get that a lot of people come to our podcast because they want to learn. And that's a great place to start. So we're not going to get mad at them for not already knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, if I'm like, you know what, if I can laugh at this, then I feel like it's going to be more approachable.
I am also wondering, I mean, like you said, the internet can be fucked up for sure. Mm-hmm. Where do you find is like the, you get the most pushback or the most like negativity?
Mm-hmm. It comes, it like ebbs and flows. For a while there, I was actually getting sent like a lot of like save yourself letters to my P.O. box.
Oh, really?
Because I got this P.O. box. I was like excited about it. I was going to do a series on YouTube, like unboxing, stuff like that. And I posted it on my channel. I was like, in case anyone, you know, wants to send a letter or anything like that, I'll read it. I'll do a series where I read your experiences anonymously, like the whole thing. Seemed like a fun idea. I did get some really awesome letters, but I would say about 50% of them were like groups that had written me being like, you're going to hell.
Jeez.
It's like, this is a lot. So I was like, I'm going to just take this PO box off of my description, because a lot of what I'm posting, has the keywords in it that people like that would easily find. And then there's my PO box. There's a way to access me.
It was probably my Starbucks coworker, honestly.
Yeah. So. It sounds like it. I mean, yeah. If she's still just pushing for that, I guess. But yeah, so that was a little daunting because you're like opening up envelopes or handwritten telling you like why you're going to go to hell. The comments affect me less. I would say I get a lot of, weirdly, I don't know, the trolls have gone to the DMs. Like, it used to be more comments, but now I get like a lot of like direct DMs of people saying some pretty horrific stuff, which I honestly kind of prefer, because the last thing I want, like, I like the idea that my social media is a safe space. Like I said, I tend to try and keep it lighthearted and full of laughter. And I know a lot of young people follow me. So I'm like, I'd rather me just see that horrific comment than everyone else having to see it. Because at this point, it's just easy for me to delete. But yeah, I think that the direct stuff is where it gets a little dicey, like the letters or very pointed direct DMs that you can tell aren't just like a general trolling comment. Yeah. That's where it gets like kind of sketch. And then more recently, TikTok. I found like after I hit a certain amount of followers, I think they started pushing me past the like queer women's sphere. So now certain videos, I can definitely tell they are landing on different sides of TikTok and people are not liking what they're seeing. So that's been interesting. It's great to have a social media platform that pushes its creators so naturally, but it's also because it's less like organic, it can push you in places that when you're talking about LGBTQ+ topics can be very controversial to certain folks. So
TikTok can be like the pot stirrer of all pot stirrers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a free like for that, all on TikTok.
Yeah. It is insane.
Yes. And it's funny because it'll be like, oh, lovely, nice comments. You know, people like, oh, this is so relatable. I appreciate your content. And then all of a sudden I can tell, like, it gets a certain amount of views. I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, I better buckle up. Just turn, like, close the app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Notifications off.
Mm-hmm.
As
as your like your presence diversifies online and like so much, and social media just becomes such a bigger thing, like mm-hmm. where do you enjoy the most, like where do you, what yeah. kind of content do you still love making?
I genuinely love recording my podcast. I also really love TikTok, which for some people seems like an eye roll, but I'm like, it's so great that it takes like no time to make content. You can make like really effective content that's funny or relatable without having to do like this crazy big editing process and everything else. So the way that I'm shifting to is really enjoying making those types of like quick form content, because I think that's what people want. I think we're steering away from, you know, people uploading one, you know, thing a month that's really high quality. People want the like really quick attention span stuff. But for my passion of it, I want to steer my YouTube towards doing less high quality, like, so, or sorry, higher quality, less content. So I was kind of stuck in the, like, I've got to upload something every, you know, 3 to 5 days on YouTube. But now I have TikTok for that. So I'm like, okay, this is kind of great because I'm still giving out content that's quick and relatable, but I would like YouTube to become a space where I'm uploading short films. I would love to do a web series and just kind of reserve it for that.
But I think that's the way a lot of people feel too.
Yeah.
I also think it's just like more organic, like these TikToks that are like, they're like people really in their environment. You know what I mean? Like it's yeah. not so staged.
Well, so. Yeah. And I think also like for me, I think about the type of content that I create on YouTube. I had and might still have a series called I Heard She's a Lesbian, where I talk about, you know, queer topics specifically for queer women. And I realized, you know, I would make a YouTube video that was 15 minutes long saying, you know, how to come out, tips on how to come out, let's just say, okay. And then I'm realizing, okay, that took me like 2 hours to sit down, and then it took me 2 hours to edit, and then I had to upload it, and then I had to promote it and get everyone there. And it's 15 minutes that someone has to sit through of me blabbing about absolutely nothing. Whereas I can put it on TikTok. It's like, here's the three tips, blah, 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 blah. It's there. And like 10 times the amount of people see it. So I'm like, you start to kind of be like, okay, well, why am I making, putting all this effort into long form content when that's, from the consumer standpoint, I don't really think that's what people want. So if I'm going to be making long form content, to me, I'd rather be written content, like a web series or another short film.
Yeah. Can you tell us any plans for any short films in the future?
My first thing I would love to do is, I mean, I'm always just trying to level it up, is a web series. So it would basically be like 10 short films in a row. I would love to do like a 6 to 10 episode web series. I have started writing, but it's kind of all up here. And basically it's been kind of frustrating, as a lot of creators I'm sure feel in the last year. I know you all talked to a lot of drag performers and I'm sure yeah. have felt that. And, you know, whether you're a performer or creator, the last couple of years has really put a hold on a lot of things. It's made certain content creation more fun and more accessible because a lot of people are online and watching content. But when it comes to like trying to get a bunch of people in a room to create a short film or a web series, it's definitely been more difficult. So I was planning on doing that like 2 years ago. So it's been kind of just on hold. So I'm very hopeful that in the next few months that will start to happen.
You just need to give yourself a ridiculously short window.
I was gonna say, yeah, just, you know.
You know,
all 10 episodes, 24 hours. Let's go.
I know. I need that end. So I've even thought about, but the last time I did it, I started and I realized halfway through that I was like, oh, I'm gonna need some money for this, like, because I want to pay everyone and I want to, like, you know, the whole thing. And I was like, started adding it up and I was like, oh god. So I made a Kickstarter, which went really well. So I was kind of thinking maybe I'll make the Kickstarter first and say like a promised date that like this web series will launch in like 6 months or whatever, so that I'm like, fuck, I gotta do it.
Perfect.
That's a good way, honestly. Right? That's like forcing yourself to do it.
Yeah, because otherwise I'll just keep being like, I don't know.
Well, you know, I wanted to give you a little second just to also let everyone know where they can find you on YouTube, Instagram, all of that.
Okay, so you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok at Brianne Williamson. And I have a podcast called I Can Explain Podcast. I almost forgot what it was called. That's good. we talk about queer topics. We have over 100 episodes. And yeah, I think that's
awesome.
It.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking some time and just chatting with us. It was so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fantastic. And hopefully I will see you around the neighborhood here in Vancouver once things start
to your junction.
Yeah, exactly. I'll see you there.
Okay, bye. Have a good day.
Okay, have a good one.
Bye.
Mm-mm, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Thanks, Brianne.
You're having such a hard time not saying
it. Yeah. Wow, that was amazing. I feel like I have to say it.
Yeah, I guess.
Wow, that was amazing. This is great. She was so sweet.
She was very sweet.
Yeah.
And very put together, despite saying that she's not put together.
I just love an interview where people know how to talk.
And people know what they want to say and how to communicate it.
Yeah.
Which all of our guests have done thus far.
Who's our least favorite guest? You'll never know.
Subscribe to our Patreon to find out.
That's funny.
Okay, anyways, song of the week.
Song of the week.
Song of the week. Liam's drinking something else.
Water.
Or is it vodka? Soda. In that big water bottle.
Yeah. Anyways, okay, what's yours?
What's yours?
Mine is Dirty by Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, you've really been into that song.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
It's a good song.
Bum, bum, dun, 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 dun. I like that.
Dun, that dun, album cover?
Dun, dun, dun. Nasty.
That's an iconic album cover.
Nasty. That's what it is.
Aw, rest in peace, Christina.
And that music video, she looks dirty. Like, she actually looks fucking dirty.
Do you mean like in a sexual way? Or
no,
like
I mean she looks physically
dirt.
She looks...
I don't think I've seen it.
Oh my god, the one where she's fucking in that like wrestling, underground wrestling ring. And she's like so sweaty, oiled up, like ratty hair, like clothes half off. And she's like...
Wow.
She looks dirty. Like the whole place looks dirty.
Yeah. It's okay. My song is Cold Heart. Panau Remix?
Oh, I like them.
Panau Remix is Pianow? By Elton John.
But they're like, they have like weird psychedelic upbeat shit.
Yeah, it's Elton John and Dua Peep. Dua Lipa. Because I think Elton John has an album coming out that's like all collaborations. Rina Sawayama's on it.
Wow.
Lil Nas is on it.
Okay.
Anyways, it's like, it's... Let me just play you the chorus because you'll know the chorus. It like... It samples... four of his songs, I think, and then they're like remixed. I don't know. Oh. And Dua Lipa sings Rocket Man at the chorus.
Anyways. I'm not the man I think I am.
Yeah. I think it's so fun.
That is fun.
It's been my end of summer song.
That's a good wrap up song.
Yeah.
It was nostalgic.
Goodbye, summer.
Goodbye,
it's September 1st.
Summer.
I just realized it's September
Hello,
1st.
Hello, school.
Oh my god, I'm so sad I'm not going to school. Oh my god. Anyways, that's our show. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter at Two Servings Pod. We also have a website, twoservingspod.com.
You can Gmail us.
You can email Gmail. Us at twoservingspod@gmail.com.
You can call me. Call me maybe. Here's my number.
Please leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Podcast
store. Or wherever you listen to your podcast that you can review.
Yes, please. It helps a lot.
Download us. Send us to your mommy.
We actually,
or your daddy.
Since I looked last, have a lot more reviews.
Oh, really?
Like almost 20.
Wow. Are they negative?
No, all 5-star. Don't ruin that ratio, people. Keep it alive.
God, that's a shitty review, bitch.
Keep it alive. See you next time. Liam, I'm cutting out your burps.
Don't.
I've gotten literal multiple complaints about your flatulence on this podcast.
Aww.
What are we gonna do? Oh no.
And your voices.
Aw, Mia.
Oh yeah.
Pixie looks mortified.
I should do a whole podcast, not in my regular speaking voice. Like, one time I'll do the whole podcast like this, and then I'll switch immediately to like,
hey. Welcome to the podcast, to everyone.
What about Jerry Seinfeld?
And Jerry Seinfeld!
Okay, that's enough. Goodbye.
You can't do it when I try. I told you
goodbye.
That.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye, everyone.
That's fucked up.